Today, more from the property front line with Chris Bates. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And I'm joined again by Chris Bates. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Martin. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you going?
Very well. Good to see you.
Yeah, a lot going on. And of course, we had our last conversation a few weeks back. And since then, the property market has taken a bit of a turn for the better, some would say. And there's quite a lot of momentum. And I think you said to me, even the investor sector looks a bit hotter now.
Yeah, it's starting to. You know, I guess in 2017, 18, there was no investors in the market. I mean, even in 15, 16, you're kind of the APRA caps and the changes to servicing were starting to work their way through. So, you know, a lot of investors were getting capped out and couldn't go and buy more because they couldn't borrow more, basically. And then also, I mean, 17, 18, they didn't want to because the market was falling. So, I guess it's just, you know, we have started to see some people come. I mean, the big thing that I've seen is that the interest-only investment rates have really kind of come back a lot in the last, you know, 2 to 3 months, like all lending has. And we can get like 5-year fixed rates for interest-only investment at around 3.6%, 3.7%. And that was like 4.8%, 4.9%. So, you know, I think at some point, if that rate keeps falling, you know, and you can get interest-only, a lot of investors will probably think, if I can borrow the money and I can get interest only for 5 years, it's probably worth it, because the yields on some, you know, even good property, which you should be buying, not the, you know, the off the plan sort of stuff that we talked about before, you might get 3.5%, 4% for. So, you know, I guess it's just some investors are starting to see that as a, I guess, an opportunity, but it's only because of the rates are dropping so low, it might make sense.
Yeah, and that's interesting, of course, because the rental returns are still pretty constricted, particularly in Sydney, where we've seen them come back quite a long way. And I was reading some material just a day or two ago to suggest that in some selected locations, there was just the first glimmers of maybe you know, some foundation to rentals going forward. But if you do the calculations, you've got to pick the right property and get the right funding and get the right rental stream to make any sense of investment property, unless you get capital growth. And of course, that's the really big question, isn't it? You know, what is the future trajectory of capital growth, particularly for those investment properties?
Yeah, I mean, it's 100% right. You never buy property for yield. You never buy a property for rent. I mean, even if you do make a little bit of money there, you have to pay, you know, it's fully taxable, right? So, you know, even if you get a 6%, you know, yield, and then you take off your interest and all your costs, you make a small profit, and then you lose 40-50% of that to the government. So you'll never get, you know, make money really on property buying it for income. The real reason that it all works is particularly for capital growth. But capital growth is not, just froze it. Capital growth is obviously not guaranteed. And a lot of people think that you buy any property and they're all going to go up at the same rates. So you've got to be extremely careful because, you know, unless it grows, you know, I've done lots of numbers on this, by 3%, you know, maybe even 4-5% a year minimum, you're going backwards. It's actually not working, the model. You could be better off putting money into super or paying off the home loan or just buying an investment portfolio. There's better options. So unless the property is growing every year, you really shouldn't own it. And that's a big mistake that I see. A lot of property investors go out there and they think, oh, it's going up. It's going up. But unless it's going up quite significantly, it's just not working. There's better options to invest your capital with less risk.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. I mean, I run in my household surveys, as you may know, both the gross and net returns on investment property. And that tells you some really stark news that, you know, roughly half of properties at the moment are underwater on the net rental basis. In other words, even allowing for all the other stuff that's going on, they're not actually making much at all. And so it is very much a question of future capital growth. And now here's the question then. You know, that yes, we are seeing some movements up in some centres in terms of the values of property. The question is this, you know, a bull trap or is there something more fundamental here? Because I guess that now becomes a critical question for a property investor. You know, if you do believe that it's the bottom of the market and things are going to improve over the next 2 to 5 years, then you probably would want to make an investment decision. But if in fact it is a bull trap, in other words, prices are going to go up a little, then they're going to go sideways and they're going to back down again. And by the way, in Ireland, on the way down post the GFC, there were 3 bull traps. As you know, before it actually hit the bottom, down 40%. So it's really tricky to call. And of course, you know, impartial data and things change. And as we were saying before, economists will change their view as to is the market going up, going down. So this is all sounding to me quite tricky.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there is, you know, obviously I've said lots of times on this, it's not one market. But if we're going to break it simply into two market, investor market and home buyer market, I think the investor market generally have done all the wrong things in the past. They've gone and bought high-rise apartments, new units because they're cheaper. In their mind, it was less maintenance, but we know that's obviously going to be the opposite. You know, they've always gone where other investors have gone as well. So they'll go to Southeast Queensland, they'll go to, you know, the high-rise market. And so that market, I just don't think, and things that have been traditionally bought by that market, home buyers don't really want them anyway. So that market's got, it's not even a bull trap. I don't even think it's rising. And I don't think even... there's been a limit to supply that's going to come. There's a lot coming in the next 2 or 3 years to the high-rise sector. And then the build quality issues, which we've spoken about before, you know, a lot of times, they're not going away. So things that have been bought by investors, there's no bull trap. They're just not even going up. They're probably still falling. So the things that are bought by home buyers, I guess it's really, there's different markets. You know, there's the first home buyer, there's the upgrader, there's the downsizer. And you've also got things that are more affordable, like house and land packages, things that are more aspirational, maybe, you know, closer to the city, etc. And so when you kind of break down the market, you've got to really target properties that suit a tradition, like a certain buyer pool. And the big problem, I guess, in Sydney and Melbourne, you've got population rises, you've got lots of people who missed out in the boom, who have got apartments that really want a house now because they've got a little child. And they're wanting to all live in the same areas because they're trying to cut their commute time. They're trying to, you know, be close to the city so they can have a family and a life and all that sort of thing. And there's just very limited properties that are coming on good streets, that aren't on main roads, that have got good light, that have, you know, et cetera. So these are the only properties that are actually probably going up now and long-term the only properties you want to hold anyway. So I guess it's just that's – is that a bull trap? I don't know. The big problem now is you've got – interest rates going down to, you know, 3% roughly for home loans, you know, that potentially could go lower. And then the APRA servicing, a lot of people will be able to borrow a lot more than they could. And they'll also have the confidence to do that because they'll know that their repayments are likely to stay low. And so a lot of families will take that risk on. So that'll create a lot of demand, whether it's right or wrong, they'll still do it with very low supply. And so you'll start to see price rises. The big problem you'll see now is, though, that with the APRA servicing, once the prices get baked in at that lower servicing rate, you can't really unwind that. It's kind of a new norm. And if rates rise, borrowing capacity has to fall, and you'll start to create problems.
Yeah, and that, of course, is always the trade-off, isn't it? You know, if rates stay low, then people probably will be able to manage. But you've always got to ask the question, what if rates were to rise? And the chances are rates will stay low for quite some time now, but who knows? And there is now talk about APRA perhaps needing to tighten its standards again because essentially there's been more of an uptake of credit than perhaps they were expecting. And of course, the latest stats show that there's been a little bit of a rise in credit, some refinancing and some new. But what's interesting to me is the latest CoreLogic data, which shows it's the top end of the market that seems to be moving fastest. And of course, your point is dead right. Limited supply for people who actually can afford and want to get into that top end. So it's not too surprising to see those prices rising compared with the bottom end of the market, where there's perhaps a lot more supply, a lot more mixed property, and very little evidence yet, in my analysis, of any real movement off the bottom.
Yeah, so I think you'll find that things that are giving a lot of lifestyle benefits to young families that work in the city of, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, and they've also seen the prices fall quite a bit, and they're like, there's that fear of missing out that they had in the boom where they did miss out and they got pushed out of the market. That's kind of still fresh in their memory, and they're thinking, God, if we don't get in now, then we will never be able to get a home, sort of thing. So you know, maybe they're, and that's probably even, to be honest, I think they're actually overpaying because, you know, the one who's, I guess, the most desperate are the one out there and they're overbidding at the auctions. And we're starting to see pretty big prices. And whether the market's actually rebounded that much or whether it's just people just with this fear of missing out, I think you'll find that the lower end of the market, you know, they are a bit more potentially concerned with the recession, you know, potentially, you know, they've started to see the impacts of the recent kind of decline. They know that it's just not a risk-free bet like they did think it was. So I don't think confidence is going to come back out there. And to be honest, even if it did, there's still too much stock that they can choose from. So you're not going to get that pressure cooker effect that you're already getting in the kind of inner rings.
Mm. Yeah, so once again, you know, we keep saying, but it's really important, the property market is not one market. It's a series of micro markets. They behave differently. Supply and demand is different and, you know, all the other factors there. The other interesting thing that I've noticed, though, is looking at the question of negative equity, right? The price falls that we've seen in some of those outer suburban areas mean that prices are still down far enough that many households are still in negative equity. And they're completely trapped. And that's another reason why I believe that, you know, with you, there will be some good news in some markets, but a lot of other markets are going to stay really stuck on the tram lines for a long time yet, simply because that negative equity trap has really been sprung.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, let's say you bought a house on land package and, you know, you paid $800 and it's worth $750 and you got a loan on, you know, of 90%. You can't refinance till that loan's down to 80%. Yep. On 750, so you're going to have to pay $100,000 off your mortgage, and you know, like, there's not that much money left over in the kitty to even if rates fall, you know, and they have. So you know, negative equity is prolific, and I think it's definitely in the kind of the new unit space as well, where you know they couldn't afford a house, so they went for the apartment, and they went for something new, and you know, they've basically lost everything, and those problems won't go away because the apartment market's not going to recover, and the house and land packages. You know, lots of builders out now are just buying work. You know, you only have to flip open the realestate.com kind of magazine on the weekend and it's like $50,000 off a reno or free kitchen or, you know, we'll give you a smart home. And there's all these stupid, crazy things just to get you to buy a house and land package. The reason why is they don't want to let their good quality workers go because they're confident in a few years' time they'll need them again. So they're just buying work. And the problem with that is the developers are also selling the land a bit cheaper. So cheaper build, cheaper land. What's that mean for all the other houses that have been built in the last 5 years? Well, they've got to be revalued on what the new house is today.
Yeah, and that's the interesting question, of course, because what hasn't been done yet is any revaluation of those properties in the books of the banks, right? And so when I run my calculations, that's precisely what I'm doing. And my view is there's around 11% of property on the bank's books that would actually now be classed as subprime or near subprime, simply because of the fact that the negative equity thing has gone wrong or because of the income flows are not sufficient to cover the costs of the property. That's a big number, right? And it's interesting because it's a lot higher than the, quote, official numbers. And, of course, it's not correlated to default rates, which are still actually a little bit higher, over, you know, higher than on average over the last 5 years, according to the latest S&P data. So it's not like we're out of the woods yet. And so we have to keep a sense of proportion, right? We know that there are some, you know, some good news stories for some people in some locations for some types of property, but it's not universally true. And my concern is that people are being sucked in areas where, in fact, these you know, positive vibes are not really happening simply because they think it's all one market.
Yeah, I think the big danger is now, right now, you know, you think another boom's going to happen, right? And so you rush in, you overpay, you also buy something that's not scarce, it's not special, and they're still selling. Like, it still astounds me when I look online and go through a Saturday on Domain and see some of the properties and the quality of the properties and some of the prices, I'm just thinking, it just doesn't make sense. Yep. You know, when you see that real scarce asset and it sees it gets a good price, you're like, okay, I think the capital growth problem as well is if we are in a world of low wage growth for the majority, and then, you know, you're looking at property values, well, if wages aren't going up, prices can't go up really because we can't just keep going multiples of income. Mm. And so the reality is for most property, you've got to be really careful, you know, banking on capital growth, because it's just if wages don't keep rising, then you're not going to get capital growth. The areas where you might get capital growth, though, is in areas where there are people with wage rises, or people who are getting wage rises across the whole city that want to move to because of the lifestyle benefits, because of the savings with commute and things like that. And so, and when a lot of younger people are moving there and they're getting promotions. So, you know, you really want to target areas where kind of the double income, higher income young families are moving to, and they're going to get big wage rises as they get promotions over the years, because the incomes in those areas are rising, even though the broader market aren't getting wage growth. And so, but if your area isn't getting that, then, you know, you've got to be really thinking, do I rent in this area versus buying? And I don't think people have thought like that before, but it's actually lower risk. You've got the ability to flexibility, et cetera. Buying is just not always the best option, especially when areas where prices aren't likely to rise.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? That in fact, you know, many would argue that paying rent is, you know, throwing money down the drain, as it were, because you're not building any future value. But if in fact property prices are not going up, then effectively all you're doing is not paying off a mortgage, but you're not actually losing anything because of that the capital value is not going up. And that's the trade-off for many people now. And it's interesting, one of the questions I keep getting is, should I rent or should I buy? And, you know, and obviously there's not a simple answer because you have to do the calculations. But I have said to them, look, you know, assume that you don't get capital growth. Now run your sums and see what you can rent for versus what you would actually have to pay if you were going to get a property and pay the mortgages, repayments on those, and all the maintenance costs and the other things that come with owning a property. Because that's the other factor that I find many people forget, right? Now, when you've got this wonderful property, if there's no capital growth, there's a lot of running costs just to keep it running.
Yeah, I always, it's funny, the whole rent is dead money sort of, you know, there's these financial beliefs that are drilled into us, you know, you've got to get your own, your Australian dream, you know, rent is dead money. You know, it's kind of like this cult that's just pushed all over Australians and this obsession, really. And the reality is, if most people did look at their situation and reconsidered it and thought, would I have been better off just to rent in this area versus the cost to pay a mortgage, all the maintenance, you know, all the repairs, the buy costs, the sell costs, all these things, would have been better to rent. And a lot of the time, unless the property has risen significantly, it would have been. And so I'm very cautious when a lot of clients come to me and they're thinking, oh, I don't want to pay rent, I've got to buy something. That is the complete wrong mindset to be thinking about investing into property. It's really, you've got to be thinking through, can I get a longer term asset that will suit me, not just for a couple of years, but for a long, long time. So you get all the security, stability benefits, but fundamentally, is it a good investment? And if it's not, then you probably should just rent. And that's just sometimes not what people want to hear, but it's sometimes the best advice.
Yeah, well, that's often the case, isn't it? And we always say, you know, when a bank says you can have this mortgage, right, they're only assessing it based on their risk to them, not necessarily the risk to you as the borrowers, or indeed your personal circumstances or your financial plan or anything, right? It's a very narrow assessment base. And so people need to do some rather different calculus to make the right decisions. And often that calculus is not fully understood by those making those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, if you know, you're wanting to, you know, your parents tell you you should, your brother, your sister, your colleagues, everyone tells you you should go and buy a property. So you save up this little bit of money and then you go into a bank or you go to a broker. And, you know, you go to a bank, what are they going to do? They're going to, you know, the personal bank is going to sell you a home loan. You know, they're not going to say, they're going to tell you how much you can borrow. You're going to go out and buy something for that. Whether it's a good decision or not, no one's going to stop you. If everyone's going to keep pushing you, actually. The other side, if you are going to see a broker, unfortunately, the broker, you know, the vast majority of brokers aren't really making much money. They're not writing many home loans. And so if you go and see a broker and they say, look, yeah, you can borrow this, they're not many brokers will stop you and say, I don't think this is a good decision, because a lot of brokers are writing very small numbers and, you know, that's their living. And so they don't see themselves as advisors or will stop you. I don't agree with it, obviously, but it's unfortunately the reality. So, you know, very few people stop people going and buying property and stop them and asking big questions.
Mm, yeah, well, you know, we've at least spelled out, Chris, some of the key questions that people should be considering, and hopefully that will help people make good decisions. I guess as we close out this conversation, my obvious question to you is, in 6 months' time, where do you think property prices in the inner ring are going to be?
So 6 months will take us to, you know, early 2020, and you'll probably start to see that autumn sort of market. I don't want to probably say it, but I do think that the good assets and the good areas, you know, could see quite significant rises. Like, I'm, you know, because, you know, there's just so much pent-up demand. It's the end of September now, and there's not much stock coming on this quality. And so, you know, you'll probably even, and you get the Christmas period, you know, people will be thinking, they'll see some 6 months of reasonable returns in the market. You know, a lot of buyers will be thinking, we'll fall for it and we'll enter the market. And, you know, over January and February. And so March, there'll be a lot of buyers pent up and ready to go. For the whole market, no. For the high-rise apartments, new units, house and land packages, new townhouses, etc., I just can't see any turnaround. But that kind of, the good streets, the good suburbs, unfortunately, I do think you'll start to see rises in Sydney, Melbourne. Mm. And just, you know, more slow and steady stuff in the other states. But that kind of inner ring, Sydney, Melbourne, I do think you'll start to see, you'll still see competition.
Yep. Well, it's where the action is going to be. I agree with you, and we're already seeing it in some of our data. But remember that that's a relatively small proportion of the total market. And the other point I'd make is that if you have a significant proportion of transactions in those particular areas which are going through, it can actually distort the overall averages across each of the main regions. So, in fact, the average price indices that are quoted may well be distorted because of the low volumes and because of the skewed sample base, as it were, simply because of the transactions that are going through. Something I think people should perhaps bear in mind when they look at some of the statistics.
I 100% agree. I can't stand the Australian Property Market Index or the Sydney or, you know, Melbourne's doing this and things like that. I just have zero time for it. I just don't think it's valuable. Mm. The reality is, I mean, you're very true. I mean, if you get a lot of good sales in the premium end of the market, it is going to squiff the statistics. So you might see 4 or 5% rises in that market, but zero or negative in some parts. And so you've really got to be careful. Don't fall for Sydney markets going up. I should buy. That doesn't mean that what you're thinking about buying is actually going to go up or is going up. So, you've got to be really careful. And unfortunately, the news and the media will report on those headline numbers because it's just digestible and it's what people want. But unfortunately, I agree with you. You know, it's pretty dangerous because you might see Sydney rises, but that doesn't mean everything is.
Yeah, and there are some media outlets that are rather strongly aligned to some property outlets. So you wonder sometimes whether they are rather conveniently telling the high-level story rather than perhaps some of the more really interesting but rather more disturbing stories that are really going on down at the grassroots level.
Yeah, you see, like, QBE did a report last week, right? And it's like, at least they broke it up to houses and units. But, you know, no offence to QBE, but if you go back and look at their reports over the years, they've been off every time. You know, they're nowhere near what their reality is. But, you know, they release the report, everyone fixates on these growth seekers, and, you know, they're just plucking numbers, you know. And, I mean, UBS is an example. I mean, they were very pessimistic on the market. Now they're very optimistic. And so you've just got to be very careful, looking too much into the forecasting. Just look at the more kind of the micro level of what you're buying. Because the macro story could be completely different.
Yeah, great advice, Chris. As always, thank you very much for your time today. And I'm sure we'll catch up a bit further down the track as this story continues to grow and develop.
Thank you, Martin. Good to see you.
Thanks. Thank you very much.